Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. Indeed, we do not. But we do help focus you on the news of the week, the events of the week, the things that have been happening over the last 2 weeks even. Through the lens of original thought, it's so good to have everyone here all across the globe as we go worldwide to a worldwide audience via the World Wide Web, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media here in the boiler room of the McBurney compound, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer, which makes it very good to be here. Extremely good to be here. We should just jump right into it here. If I could stop untying my tongue or untie my tongue, I think I would want to untie my tongue, not stop untying my tongue. And I'll get to that post-haste. As we dive into the news, I just want a quick update, a quick hit here from the Decline and Fall of Western Civilization file. Bloomberg is reporting that a quarter of all adults in the United States and the United Kingdom now have a tattoo, at least one tattoo. That is approximately 25% for those of you who matriculated in the government schools. Yes, indeed. They say nearly half of all American millennials have a tattoo, at least one tattoo, and 100% of them are desperate to have someone tell them they like their tattoo. That's the millennials, indeed. In the United States, tattoos are estimated to be a $1 billion industry. A billion, really? Only a, you got a quarter of the people doing something, yet it's only a $1 billion industry. It shows that the tattoo artists, the tattoo industry leaders, the captains of the industry, so to speak, generally are not all that ambitious. And so it's only $1 billion. But there you have it. All you millennials, I just want to tell you, I don't like your tattoo. I don't mean to hurt your feelings. No, don't start crying. It's okay. Go talk to some kids who are 17, 18. They'll tell you how great your tattoo is. Me, myself, I'm not impressed. Maybe if you were in the Navy and you had a tattoo, okay, maybe I would, maybe something like that. But other than that, I'm not very impressed. In fact, I think it's a sign of the decline and fall of Western civilization. So that's not the greatest news to start off the show, but let's go right to some good news. From the Domestic Tranquility file, the state of American domestic tranquility was improved over the past week when Robert Melson, a convicted murderer, convicted of murdering three people, way, way back in 1994, back when many of these tattooed millennials were being born. He murdered three people. Let's see. He opened fire on four employees at a Popeyes as he was robbing the Popeyes. The surviving employee crawled for help and was able to identify one of the robbers, who was a former employee, and that led to him fingering Melson, and Melson was convicted duly back in the mid-1990s, and he was finally put to death last Thursday by lethal injection. Despite a mad flurry of last-minute appeals filed by Melson's lawyer, the lawyer in one of the following said this about the death penalty in Alabama. He says, quote, "Alabama's execution protocol creates the illusion of a peaceful death when in truth it is anything but." That's according to Melson's attorney, and we can only hope that he is correct. Yes, the lethal injection and all of that. All right, that's all we got on that. Well, the guy's dead, so domestic tranquility has been improved by at least the measure of one man convicted of murder. Convicted of a murder he committed over 20 years ago, languishing on death row only because he sought to stay his execution and avoid his inevitable meeting with his creator, whom he met on Thursday, and it probably did not go very well for him as well. If he thought the execution was painful, well, all right. You got another thing coming. Now, let's go jump right in here to the pot never hurt anyone file. You've heard that, right? It's potheads who say that. Well, pot never hurt anyone, dude. Never hurt me, man. It's great. It's medicine, dude. So what was the story we saw about the company? There's a company that in here in Colorado, there's a company importing from China a smell-proof bag. It was a bag that you could lock up your pot in and nobody could smell it. Yeah, he alleged that he was importing these super locking smell-proof bags, pouches, so to speak, in order to protect kids from marijuana is the reason he was doing it. He was a man on a crusade to protect kids from marijuana and to help potheads to hide their stash. Apparently. Anyway, the federal government interrupted his latest shipment because they called it drug paraphernalia. So, meaning there are still some people in the federal government who maintain some level of sanity, and they don't want you importing drug paraphernalia. But that's a different story.
He paid a due, it'll be.
That's right. He probably just didn't pay the tax in a timely manner. If he finds the right palm to grease there at the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, I'm sure he'll have his little super Ziploc pot baggies that he can. But that's a whole different story that I just happened to see on the news. Find a crusader for liberty, truth, and justice, and how to hide your weed from your kids. But this is from the pot never hurt anyone file. It's a difficult story to report, I might add. Let's see here. A British teenager cut off his own... Try that again. A British teenager who had been hooked on cannabis since he was 16 years old went into a psychotic episode and cut off his own... Well, I can't say it, but I'm sure you get the picture. He also stabbed his mother. After smoking pot, he started smoking pot, according to his dad, when he was 16 years old. He went from being a bright, bubbly lad into what his father calls now a waste of space. That's pretty harsh from dear old dad. A waste of, well, he stabbed his wife. So he's not had, it's worse than a waste of space. Anyway, his son became delusional, paranoid. He thought people were living in the walls of his bedroom. And insisted that mermaids exist at one point with his, with dear old dad. The father says the teen continues to recover from the ordeal. He has reconciled with his mother and allegedly has no recollection of the incident. But hey, pot never hurt anyone. Never, never, never. All right, so I'll post a link to that story. If you want to get into the gory details, and I can tell you they're pretty gory. So there you have that. Now, let's see here. Learned again, another, I always watch the local news. Do you people watch the local news anymore? Does anybody watch the local news? I watch the local news because I like to catch up on the weather. And I like to see how dreadfully liberal the local news anchors and anchorettes are. And it's dreadful. They're horribly liberal. They reported this week that in Colorado, the legislature has passed a new regulation instituting a fine of $82 if you are caught with an unrestrained child in your car. That means if they're not properly restrained in the proper seats, with the proper belt and the proper loops and the straps and the hooks, if they are improperly restrained, that is a fine of $82. $82. How do they come up with this? Is there a group of lawyers sitting around a table with calculators estimating how many people are going to get a ticket for this? There's an estimate of how many people are unrestrained. How much money do we need? Of course, we get a 20% cut for coming up with these figures. We're going to settle. I said 90. No, he said 75. They ended up negotiating it, and they settled in at $82 for the unrestrained child. I just found that to be just ludicrous. just ludicrous. $82 for an unrestrained child. But there it is. What do you want to do? There you have it. So strap your kid down and do it properly. All right, now I want to talk about candlelight vigils. Yeah. Candlelight vigils, I'm going to talk about them. And we're going to talk about anti-Sharia law rallies. That's what we want to talk about. These are two things that came into prominence. Well, they've come. The candlelight vigil has come into prominence, I believe, since Columbine. I think that was the first full-on candlelight vigil that I recall, anyways. Before that, people just went to church that Sunday and mourned. But now they show up for a candlelight vigil. And there's a lot of that going on. And now there are anti-Sharia law rallies. And I want to ask the question, which of these two social events are more significant, are more meaningful? Which would be more important to attend, an anti-Sharia law rally or a candlelight vigil? Well, you decide. I will report, and you can decide. We start in Colorado. Thornton, Colorado. KDVR reports that Thornton police are now investigating the death of 10-year-old Kaya Campbell as a homicide. The child went missing last Wednesday, and the child's body was found in Thornton on Thursday afternoon. Thornton is a suburb of Denver, Colorado. And they were going to have a candlelight vigil on Friday night. And due to the investigation, they wanted to have the vigil right there at the spot where the body was found. And the police said, could you hold off on the vigil till we gather all the evidence? So they had the candlelight vigil on Saturday night right near the open space where little Kaya Campbell's body was found. Here's a 10-year-old girl. Goes for a walk with a friend. Her and the friend are separated when a rainstorm breaks out and they're running for shelter under trees and whatnot on the way home. And the girl goes missing. The next day she's found dead. This happens all the time. All the time. And I wonder, what goes on at these candlelight vigils? I need to know. Is there some outlet for the rage of the community against the murderer? Or is it just a bunch of people lighting their candle in a daze and just not even knowing how to cope with the fact that for some reason, suburban Americans have been asked to tolerate a level of violence and bloodshed in our communities that is outrageous? Has anyone ever stood up at one of these candlelight vigils and said, enough is enough, this is ridiculous, we need to petition our governing officials to start putting the fear of God into anyone who would consider hurting, kidnapping, or God forbid, murdering a 10-year-old girl? All I ever see at the vigils are people hugging and weeping on each other. You would think that the family would be outraged, incensed, furious, hell-bent on vengeance against the killer. That's what you would think. But instead, they weep and light their candles, and it's frankly a pathetic display, in my humble opinion. And I am outraged at the fact that a 10-year-old girl could be kidnapped and murdered in a suburb of my town. I'm outraged about it. And I want vengeance upon the killer. I want him hunted down like a mad animal and executed with extreme prejudice. And I want to rally the community to march upon the house of the governor and the mayor and demand that animals like this be punished. We are not going to tolerate this level of violence in our community anymore. Well, that's what I want to do. I've never been to a candlelight vigil. Have we ever been to a candlelight vigil? I don't think we've ever been to it. Well, maybe I'll attend one in the not-too-distant future. So there's your candlelight vigil. And this happens every single day somewhere in America. A little girl is brutally murdered, kidnapped, beaten, raped, and murdered every single day. And you call this a civilized country. I think it's rather uncivilized. And of course, the Islamists are uncivilized, right? That goes without saying. Let's turn to the march against Sharia law, which took place this past weekend. NBC reports that demonstrations against Islamic law took place on Saturday, several rallies all across the country. The rallies were against Sharia law. Now, that got my attention right there. The fact that Americans, red-blooded, normal Americans, born here, lived here their whole life, are organizing marches against Sharia law. If you would have asked me after September 11th what would be the status of Sharia law in 15 years, I would have looked at you like you were insane. There's no way anyone would have anything to worry about as regards Islam, Islamification, or Sharia law. But here we are, and there they are marching against Sharia law. And, well, it's just a shock to me. It's a shock to me that we're having to march against something like this. And when I give you all the details, I think you'll be shocked too. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining us as we review the various marches that have been occurring. So we talked about the Candlelight Vigil. Now we're going to talk about the Sharia law, March Against Sharia Law. It's called the March Against Sharia, and it's sponsored by Act for America, which is classified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an anti-Muslim hate group. Okay. So the Southern Poverty Law Center is a pile of cretinous, treasonous homosexuals who stand against everything that is right and good in America. And so the fact that they classify Act for America as an anti-Muslim hate group, well, that doesn't really influence my opinion of them at all. On the other hand, having seen coverage of the marches, I am able to make some judgments. Number one, and this is a shock to the system, there were anti-Sharia protesters, counter-protesters, marching in favor of Sharia law in America. That's pretty bizarre. But there it was, on display in major metropolitan cities all over the country. You had lined up on one side the homos, the misfits, the tattooed, the criminally insane with the facial piercings and the Bernie Sanders bumper stickers. Those are the pro-Sharia law marchers. And on the other side of the police line, you had what looked to me like mostly trailer trash and bikers with little moral judgment to their credit, even less wisdom. But they know that they're against Muslims cutting people's heads off. And it's important that you draw the line somewhere. And apparently they draw the line at Muslim head cutting. And so here's what's disturbing about this is I would not want to be associated with either side. Neither the homo misfits with the tattoos and the facial piercings and the criminally insane lawyers and the Bernie Sanders bumper stickers. I don't want to march with them. And I don't want to march with my Trump's the president, damn you, T-shirt with their American flag. The sleeves are cut off the T-shirt. And there's the obligatory spaghetti stain on the... So I don't want to march with them either. And if both of these sides are allowed to go at one another, well, it's just going to be ugly and disturbing for the country. And nobody wins. Nobody wins. Apparently, the marches became somewhat violent, although the homos, misfits, and the tattooed, criminally insane, facially pierced millennial weirdos were generally scared of the bikers. And so it didn't become all that violent. Bikers would turn around and go, bleh, and millennials would run and wet themselves. But there was pepper spray deployed, apparently. There was a melee, allegedly, up in Seattle. Pepper spray. The speaker for the March Against Sharia, he said, "We are not anti-Muslim, we're anti-radical Islam." And so right there is his mistake. If you're not anti-Muslim, well, then you're not anti-radical Islam. Me, I'm a Christian. And as a Christian, I am by definition anti-Islam. Because by holding forth that Jesus Christ is the creator, the savior, and the judge of the universe, I am accusing Muhammad of being a liar. And I'm willing to debate that, and I'm willing to back up my position. And I'm no friend of Islam. And I think anyone who practices Islam is dangerous. Number one, they're misled, at the very least. And at the worst, they're dangerous. So that's my position. I am anti-Islam. Thank you very much. But the hapless bikers and trailer dwellers that were marching against Islam, well, they're no help whatsoever. There's more details, but who really cares? So let's get back to my question. If you felt the need to attend a rally or a march, which I have never felt that need. I have done it out of a feeling of obligation toward the lost and the stupid. I mean, I have tried. I've made my effort. I've done my fair share of marching. And I have attended my fair share of rallies, thank you very much. But I've never felt really compelled to do it. Well, maybe I was. Maybe in the case of the murdering of unborn children, I actually felt compelled to stand up and go march with a few sane people who say that we cannot live in a civilized country and expect the blessings of the Almighty God if we continue to murder our children. Okay, I admit I felt compelled to do that. And I have done it on a number of occasions, and I probably will do it again. But as for a candlelight vigil, I have never felt compelled to attend. And as for marching against Islam, well, only if I have an M16, then I would be willing to march against Islam. And I did volunteer to do that at one point in my career, and I suppose I'm glad I did. But what does this signify? These two juxtapositioned social events. And to me, this represents, well, the candlelight vigil. The candlelight vigil, to me, represents the beatification of the American male. I said the beatification. That might be a new word that I've coined. But if you're familiar with the alpha male, beta male, right? Have you heard those terms? I'm not going to explain them. If you need to, you could pause the show and go look them up. But the American male has been beatified. And in the presence of horrific bloodshed, murder, and violence in his own neighborhood, the American male is expected to light his candle in a daze and weep on the shoulder of his wife and daughter and son. Instead of standing up on a soapbox and demanding that the governing officials stand up and do what's right and stop the bloodshed. Marching to the homes of the legislature and scaring the hell out of them. And demanding that they stop with the tolerance of the murder and the rape and the kidnapping and the catch and release policy that leads to more murder and rape and kidnapping. That's what needs to happen. But no, the beatified American male just lights a candle and weeps. And then, how significant is it? Well, it signifies also the feminization of the American Christian male. And also the paganification of mourning, for crying out loud. Didn't the Vikings light a candle and set things on fire and the smoke went up to Odin and all that? Where did this come from, this candlelight vigil? Certainly not a Christian tradition. In the Christian tradition, in the wake of such a horrific story, the rape and murder of a 10-year-old girl, the pastor would call church into session and everybody would show up at the church and they'd mourn like normal, decent people. And then the pastor, if he was a good pastor, he would lead the march down to scare the hell out of the legislature and insist that they better do something about this. So on the one side, you've got the Christian community, the one that actually has the answers for all the problems facing America and civilization and their family and their own life, being beatified into weeping and lighting candles. And on the other side, you've got the bikers who they're just ready to march into the streets and smack some Muslim heads together. And neither is the proper response, neither one. The proper response to the bloodshed and murder in our communities, I have elaborated on and elucidated. The proper response to the Islamic threat is a masculine Christianity that preaches the gospel against Islam without fear, even in the face of death, and a dramatic military effort on behalf of our government to destroy any nation that would advocate the Islamification of anywhere outside of their filthy mosques. If you want to do that in your filthy, disgusting mosque, you go right ahead, Mohammed. But as far as marching outside your mosque and coming to my country and insisting that I adopt your rules, no, we're going to stop you back there in Krapistan in your filthy, disgusting mosque. And I wouldn't let any of them immigrate here. Not a single one. So I guess that's that. All right. So let's move on now. Oh, speaking of Islam and Islamification. You can't make up the news of the day to more clearly delineate the spiraling down into a vortex of meaninglessness that is occurring in Western civilization. All you have to do is read the news. Here we have an example from the Associated Press. They cover three men. They report on three men in Pakistan who have fathered nearly 100 children between the three of them. And Pakistan is carrying out a census for the first time in almost 20 years. And guess what they're finding? They're finding a population explosion because the Muslims procreate. Yes, yes. In fact, some people at the UN are quite disturbed and worried about this population explosion there in Pakistan. Experts warn that the surging populace is gouging into hard-won economic gains and social services. So while the average Muslim family realizes the benefit of having a lot of kids, the drug-addled homosexuals at the Unpopulation Control Bureau insist that it's problematic. So who do you think wins that argument? Eventually. Okay, think the long game here. Yeah, talk about Islamicization. Pakistan has the highest birth rate in South Asia at around 3 children per woman. And I have a quote here from Gulzar Khan, the father of 36 children there in Pakistan. He says, quote, God has created the entire universe and all human beings. So why should I stop the natural process of a baby's birth? And I'm like, hey, Gulzar, I could have a beer with you. We could talk. I mean, he's the Muslim, and he's making sense. Meanwhile, over at the United Nations, observers, according to the Associated Press, have warned that the population boom is negating progress. It's using up valuable resources in a young country where jobs are scarce. And nearly 60 million people live below the poverty line. Yes, oh! I have a quote here from Ziba Sathar. Ziba, I said. The Pakistani director of the Unpopulation Council. And Ziba says, it definitely is a problem because it is affecting health outcomes adversely and also eating into development gains. Meanwhile, the Muslims just want to have more kids. Why? Because they're poor. And if they have more kids, there's a chance one of them will end up doing well for himself. There's the belief in Islam. Listen to how the AP says there's a belief in Islam that prevents family planning. Family planning. That's a nice way to say choking off your posterity and or murdering your children. There's a belief in Islam that's against all that. And then also tribal enmity is another factor. And having observed Muslim history for the past 1,400 years now, I would guess that tribal enmity is the number one factor in Muslims having a lot of kids. Why? Because other Muslims tend to cut your family's head off. And having a lot of kids ensures the survival of your bloodline, despite the opinion of the pile of homosexuals over at the Unpopulation Council. All right, I can't take it anymore. You have to stop. There it is. Finally. Okay, let that roll. I was waiting for the chorus, for crying out loud. You're dragging this out. What a self-indulgent song. My goodness. All right. That's right. That's another one. Another suicide. Although his suicide was accidental, from what I understand. Now, there's a story. You know, when the authorities stumbled upon the facts surrounding that case, they felt it was best to leave it unsolved, so to speak. All right, so we won't go there. But meanwhile, let's revisit the decline and fall of Western civilization file. I just talked about the fact that Pakistan, which is an officially Islamic nation, founded, in fact, on the principle that Islam would rule. They have the highest birth rate in South Asia. Meanwhile, back at the ranch in Nevada, there is a physician who says he's claiming that insurance companies. Well, let me give you the facts. Brian Callister is an associate professor of internal medicine at the University of Nevada, and he tried to transfer two patients to California and Oregon for certain medical procedures. And he says two different insurance companies denied those transfer requests. And in both cases, according to Brian Callister, the insurance company's medical director said to him, quote, Brian, lean into your phone, Brian, listen to me. We're not going to cover that procedure, and we're not going to cover the transfer of that patient. But would you consider assisted suicide? Now just let that sink in. This is your doctor. He's trying to transfer you for possibly a life-saving procedure. And your insurance company says, well, would you consider suicide as an alternative? And, well, Dr. Callister was shocked, frankly. And he says the patients were not terminal, but they would have become terminal without the procedures. And he's quite upset that that the insurance companies took such a tack with him. He says insurance companies in states where assisted suicide is legal have refused to cover expensive life-saving treatments and instead are offering assisted suicide. More than a dozen states, according to this article from the Washington Times, are actively considering legislation to legalize physician suicide, including Nevada, where Dr. Callister testified against the proposed bill on the suicide of the state of Nevada. Thank God there's a doctor in Nevada willing to stand up and say, no, I'm against suicide. And I'm against homicide, which is what this is. You can't offer someone the option of suicide. At that point, it becomes homicide. But if things are all insane. It's just all insane. Let's see. The Washington Times reminds us that Washington became the sixth U.S. jurisdiction, that must be Washington, D.C., to enact a law legalizing suicide. Actually, I shouldn't even put it that way. It's not assisted suicide. They have legalized homicide by physicians, is what they've done. And along with them, they're the six, right? You've got California, Colorado, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. Oddly enough, the same mix of states that have legalized marijuana to one degree or another. I'm not trying to draw any association. I'm just saying, what's the deal with all the pot states? You legalize pot, a few years later, you're lobbying for suicide. Maybe somebody could make a connection? No, pot never hurt anybody. All right, so there you have it. While the Muslims are procreating at a fairly impressive rate for the modern world, here in America, we're opting for suicide as a legitimate solution to medical problems. For example, in Massachusetts, two doctors have been allowed to move forward with a lawsuit seeking an order that the state's murder and manslaughter laws do not apply to physicians who offer lethal medications to terminally ill patients. That's right. Reuters is basically reporting that these two doctors, they want to change the law so that if a doctor kills someone, the doctor cannot be charged with manslaughter or murder. And I'm sure there's some legalistic technicalities that have to be made. Well, you have to have asked for it. The paperwork has to be in order. It has to be reviewed by this and that. And then we can kill him, is the bottom line. So that's happening in Massachusetts, the cradle of American civilization. Superior Court Judge Mary in Boston, in a ruling last week, declined to dismiss these murderous doctors' lawsuits because one of the doctors is suffering from cancer, and it's just a sad, sad story. So Judge Mary, she felt compelled to, she argued that a cloud of uncertainty is preventing physicians from providing such medications, is what the, That's what the judge is allowing the doctors to argue, that what they're actually giving when they murder someone is medication. And they don't want a cloud of uncertainty. They want to be able to just go ahead and kill this guy and then move on with our lives and continue to fund the insurance companies and the medical conglomerates. And I mean, there's a lot of money involved here. And those old sick people, they're just burning through cash at the end. And assisted suicide would be quite the economic boost to an insurance and medical industry that are frankly in chaos, financial chaos, trouble, and all of that. Let's see, the Attorney General there in Massachusetts, Mara, the Attorney General, declined to comment. Why? Because she's a coward in an empty skirt. and she probably sides with the homicidal, suicidal doctors because one of them has cancer, and it's so sad that his friend can't kill him. Yeah, one doctor wants the other doctor to kill him, and he doesn't want the other doctor to get in trouble. Apparently is how this... So the cowardly empty skirt, Attorney General Mara, she has declined to comment. I, on the other hand, I have chosen to comment. I think if you file a case seeking the right to murder another person, you should be arrested for attempted murder. You should have your mental status analyzed, and then you should be put on trial. And if convicted of advocating the murder of innocent people, you yourself should be executed with extreme prejudice and as painfully as possible. And quickly, thank you very much. By the way, Reuters reminds us that in 2012, Massachusetts voters narrowly defeated a ballot initiative to let them all kill themselves. And so my guess is it'll pass pretty soon, and you'll have more and more Bostonians opting or being opted to exit. Okay, so that's from the Suicidal Idiot Children file, matter of fact. Try to figure out who is the most suicidal and who is the most idiotic in that story. Meanwhile, from Boston, we go to Hartford, Connecticut. Right there in the basket of the cradle of American civilization, and Hartford, Connecticut is on the brink of bankruptcy. That's right. The municipality has a massive budget deficit, and since Aetna, one of the largest employers in Hartford, is planning to move. Well, city fathers are freaking out because they think they may have to declare bankruptcy because the property tax isn't high enough. That's their excuse. The mayor says that they have a small tax base along with growing fixed costs, and this has produced a structural budget deficit that has... accumulated and accrued, of course, having nothing to do with anything I have done, and not my staff, and certainly not my predecessor, or any members of my party. We don't have anything to do with this. This is a structural deficit, do you understand? So he won't admit that it's socialism, rampant liberalism, not the squandering of the wealth of all the generations before them. No, it's none of that. It's just a structural deficit. As if it happened in a vacuum by accident, and he happened to stumble into the position of mayor. When in reality, my guess is, and I don't know who this mayor is, my guess he is a lawyer, he or she, Luke Bronin. Well, you'd never want to judge anymore. The mayor's name is Luke. And my guess is he's a lawyer who has participated in the dismantling of fiscal sanity for his entire career, culminating in being elected as the socialist mayor of Hartford, Connecticut. That's my guess. And he's going to blame it on the structure and the fact that their immoral property tax is just not high enough. All right, fine. Let's see how far that story gets you, chump, in bankruptcy court. Morons. All right, do we have time for this? I have time for this. From the politics file, a filmmaking company funded by taxpayers has produced a documentary that is to be broadcast on Independent Lens on PBS. Are you familiar with this show, Independent Lens? It's always the creepy, artsy documentaries with the weird camera angles and things are out of focus and way too much shadows, and just weirdness. You know, it's like it was shot by college students, but because of that, it's hip. That's what the Independent Lens is on PBS. Well, they have a new documentary that documents the sex change transition of a 16-year-old teenager. Yeah, the show follows the journey of a trans teen as he navigates adolescence, sobriety, and the physical and emotional ramifications of his changing gender identity. Through the process, his mother makes her own transformation, traveling a difficult road toward accepting that the daughter she raised is now her son. It's a love story. That's my PBS announcer voice. It's a love story all about reminding us that families are not only given, but chosen. Chosen, yes. Let's all go to yoga class. All right. So basically, you have your tax dollars and mine funding a movie that is supportive of transgender self-mutilation is what? Mutilization? I almost invented another word. Transgendered self-mutilization that's going on out there. And you know what? I'm not so outraged that it's my tax dollars, because my tax dollars go for all kinds of stuff that I wouldn't support, including that streetlight they just put in on Quincy Boulevard that I'm frankly upset about. So my tax dollars, they go toward all kinds of things that I probably would rather they not go for. But the outrage here is not that it's our tax dollars. It's that the mentally deranged people at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting want to proselytize us and our children to be in favor of transgendered mental delusion and self-mutilation. That's what we should be upset about. I don't care that it's taxpayer dollar, or if I do, that's down at number 8 or 9 on the list of things I'm upset about. The fact is, you've got people advocating criminal, mentally deranged behavior on the public airwaves, and that's what should have you upset. Your taxpayer dollars aside, what about all the souls and lives these perverts are going to threaten and destroy? I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. So good to have you along as we, document the decline and fall of a once fine civilization. Oh, by the way, when it comes to the PBS sex change special they've got going there, A Breitbart. This is from Breitbart. Breitbart reminds us, as they always do about Donald Trump, that Donald Trump's budget proposal for 2018 would end federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and shut down the NEA. That's right. Breitbart is always quick to remind us of how hard Donald Trump is working for conservative values. And so I would make a bet with anyone at Breitbart right now for $1,000. I will bet any of the reporters at Breitbart, including, I can't bet Breitbart himself because he unfortunately has passed from the scene. Anyway, I would be willing to bet that in conference committee over the next few months, the Republicans will give back, number one, funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. They will give back all the funding for the NEA. They will give back all the funding for Planned Parenthood, and all that will actually make it into the budget that the Republicans pass. Anybody want to take that bet? Why am I willing to make that bet? Because that is how allegedly Republican presidents have bamboozled the conservative Christians for the last 30 years. That's right. They They introduce a budget that makes all the Republicans and all the Christians stand up and go, yeah, defund Planned Parenthood. No more Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Defund the Energy Department. Defund the National Education Association. Go, yay, team. And then when they get into the actual budget and the congressional meat grinder there at the end, it all comes out and all the liberal, immoral programs that the president stood up against, they all get funded. And then the alleged Republican president goes out and campaigns on the fact that I tried to stop all this. We need your vote even more. We need you to donate even more. And the stupid, moronic, bamboozled Christians just keep on writing those checks, baby. Well, when are we going to realize that we've been shined? We've been spit shined, people, by the Republicans. And Donald Trump is, he's smacking that cloth against us again. Smack, pop, spit shining all those Christians. Bunch of morons. All right. I mean, smart enough to realize that there is a God and that they need salvation. But just not that swift is all. All right. Now, speaking of transgendered freaks of nature, let's go to this. This is hands down the most ludicrous, ridiculous story of the week. In fact, it's reason number 1,081 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Kate Hall, a junior at a Connecticut high school, typically comes in the top of the track competitions until this year. This year, she has routinely lost because opposing Cromwell High accepted a boy claiming to be a transgendered girl on the track team. Did I already cover this story, or is this another one?
It's probably another one.
I think I already covered this story. I'm going to have to do some research to find out if I've... Surely there's not two of these trannies out there stomping the girls' hearts into the dirt out there on the track. Uh-huh. Anyway, people are upset. Hapless parents are saying that they're shocked and outraged that a biological male who identifies as a girl is being allowed to beat up on their girls in track competitions. Let's see. The freshman 15-year-old biological male has been extremely successful as a male competing against females. Imagine that. The tranny says, it feels good. I'm really happy to win. I'm really proud of it. I sort of expected it because I've always won. I've always gotten first place. At least since he started, competing with the girls. This alleged tranny has taken no steps to medically transition into a girl. He simply identifies as a girl. And at Stonington High School in Connecticut, that's enough. All you have to do is say you're a girl. He stands taller than all of his opponents. He is clearly farly more muscular and even sports a faint mustache. But he identifies as a girl. And that's all that matters. Let's see. Even in New Britain, there in Connecticut, the town, even as most people, this is a Breitbart reporting, even as most people break their neck trying desperately to avoid being seen as criticizing a transgender athlete, many are still whispering in the background and wondering, is this really fair? But they're not allowed to say it out loud. They can only whisper, is this really fair? I think I see a mustache. I don't think that's a girl. So these hapless moronic, hey, if you have to whisper for fear of being persecuted about a transgender beating up your daughter on the track field, maybe you could consider taking your kid out of the demented school. How about that, Mom, Dad? And besides, is fairness really the debate? Is that really the debate? You've got a transgendered person out there on the track field in front of God and everybody with the full support of the school administration. Isn't the criminal behavior of the adults in this mentally ill boy's life, isn't that open to debate? Mom? Dad? Is it not open to debate? The fact that your school is run by the criminally insane? Maybe if you would stop and debate that, you wouldn't have to whisper and be afraid of being tagged as a homophobic, transphobic, phobic. By the way, I'm a phobic. I want you people to know. And by the way, I prefer the physical description. I prefer the physical description of phobic and philic. So I'm homophobic. So what does phobic mean? If you go back to physical science, eighth grade, probably 12th grade now. So phobic means that it tends to repel, right? Philic means it tends to attract. If you're hydrophobic, if something is hydrophobic, it tends to repel water, tends to repel the H2O molecule. If something is hydrophilic, it tends to attract water. So I'm homophobic. I tend to repel homos because I don't tolerate their mental illness, and I actually confront them about the fact that they're in utter rebellion against God. There's a good chance they're mentally ill, and they could end up killing themselves in a state of depression, alcoholism, and drug addiction. And that tends to repel homos, so I am homophobic. Anderson Cooper, on the other hand, is homophilic. He tends to attract homosexuals because he entertains them in their mental derangement and tells them how wonderful they are. And I think he even dates some of them, and he even married one, from what I understand. So he's a homophile, I am a homophobe, but in the physical sense, okay? Have I made myself clear on that? All right, so there's your tranny on the track team. All right, that's great. Now, from the Queering of Ireland file, it's a brand new file, so we don't report that much on Ireland. Leo Varadkar is set to become the Republic of Ireland's first gay prime minister. Indeed. And he's also the country's youngest ever leader. His name is Leo. And he's a faggot. Leo the faggot. I believe the term faggot was coined in Ireland by my forefathers, as a matter of fact. And now we've got an open, flaming homosexual about to be installed as the Prime Minister of Ireland. What does he have to say of himself? Leo says, "If my election shows anything, it's that sanity holds no place in this republic." I'm sorry, I misquote. He says, "If my election shows anything, it's that prejudice has no hold in this republic." Prejudice is what I meant to say. "When my father traveled 5,000 miles to build a new home in Ireland, I doubt he ever dreamed his son would grow up to be its preeminent faggot." I'm sorry, to be its leader is what I meant to say. "My father'd be spinning in his grave right now, as a matter of fact. And I want any child growing up in Ireland right now to know, I hope you look at me and say to yourself, there's nothing I can't do if I'll just believe in myself." Unquote. Leo, preeminent faggot there. And by the way, the BBC reminds us in this article that homosexuality in Ireland was officially illegal until 1993. Barely 20 years ago, it was flat out illegal. Homosexuality was considered a criminal behavior just 20 some years ago in Ireland. And by the way, for all you millennials out there, this was also the case for the previous 5,000 years of human history, except for brief periods immediately before the decline and fall of major world empires. Except for those brief moments in history, homosexuality was always considered a criminal behavior and a mental illness. Except, as I said, for brief periods of time, just before the collapse of major world orders. And so think about where we are right now. I believe, and I don't know, I'm not a historian. If there's a historian in the audience, maybe you can correct me. Even though homosexuality was rampant and tolerated in the Greek and Roman empires, I don't think they ever called it marriage. I think they just got really sicko, decadent, homophilic is what happened. But I think even in their lowest and most perverted state, I don't think even the Romans or the Greeks said that it was marriage. They weren't that insane. And now here we stand on the cusp of the decline and fall of yet another great world order. And who's at the bottom of it all? chewing at the ankles of civilization once again. It's the criminally insane, the godless, and the homosexuals. And the Muslims are in there somewhere, but they're way, way down the list as far as a threat to Western civilization, and especially where it counts as a threat to you or your family or your spiritual wellness. The Muslims are way, way down, 20, 30 spaces down the list behind these type of perverts. All right, what else have we got? Well, that's it. We're about out of time. I hear the music. So that music means we're about out of time. If you are able, you should join me tomorrow on the radio. And I forget the call letters of the station, which is fairly embarrassing because I've been on that station for many, many years. And it's AM 670 KLTT, where I will read and comment upon a letter from a schoolgirl written to me and some of my friends from the Abolish Human Abortion organization as we went down there and we witnessed for the truth on a high school campus. Tune in tomorrow, 3 o'clock Denver time, AM 670 KLTT, for a letter from a schoolgirl. Yes, indeed, and you can also catch that online. Until then, this is Doug McBurney. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.